It's a foreign exchange account. Don't whatever you do,
Okay.
don't let your bank convert your dollars into yen for you, because they'll rip you off by about 3 to 5 yen to the dollar. So for a budget like this, you're talking about a few $1,000 lost just by letting the bank exchange the funds. Wise are the best and easiest way for smaller remittances under 1 million yen. But with Wise, they'll also let you hold money in the account. So you could, whenever you've got some extra dollars, you could convert them into yens if the rates are attractive, and they'll be kept in a Wise account. You can even get a debit card issued from Wise so that when you're in Japan, you can use that for shopping and stuff.
Oh, nice.
Doesn't work everywhere though, so don't have a backup option, but it's a good service to have. OFX, which is another one that we use, are much better for bigger transfers. So when you're actually purchasing the property, you'll be needing to transfer let's say 20 million yen roughly to the realtor, who will then be distributing it domestically to the seller, to the lawyer, to whoever needs to get paid. So when you're doing a big transfer, Wise are not a financial institution officially in Japan. They don't have, so they can't do transfers into and out of Japan of above 1 million yen, or they can, but it's not very cost effective. They have to do it in multiple transfers. So OFX are a service that are used that is used for bigger property transactions. And then it also comes, if you sign in through our referral link, it'll come with a corporate account manager. So with Wise or other services, if something goes wrong or you're not sure where the money is or a delay, you have to contact the call center and wait for somebody to get back to you. And with OFX, because they deal with bigger transfers, you'll have a dedicated account manager to email the same person and get things sorted out always, which is very handy. So hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so just a quick heads up as usual before we get right into today's episode. We are now in the last home run towards the Japan Real Estate Summit in Tokyo in just under 3 weeks. That's 12 and 13 April, Saturday and Sunday at the Tokyo International Forum near Tokyo Station, as well as online via the stream. This is usually when most of you wake up and purchase your tickets, but this time around we're already beyond half of our physical capacity, so they do seem to be selling faster. The event space only holds up to 100 people, so I wouldn't wait until the last minute. If you want to listen to our experts, Emil Gorgis, myself, Blanca Kobayashi, Tracy Northcott, Matt Ketchum, Anton Warman, Hiroshi Shimizu, Chai Kanda, Alicia Kinwang, Shu Matsuo Post, and Brett Lee, as well as Matthew Kyle, who will all be discussing everything under the sun, from family homes and mortgages, short-term stay properties, Akiya's investments, Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, and other attractive locations around the country, visas, incorporation, hiring, firing, and training, renovations, repairs, rebuilds, DIY projects, seriously, everything. And more importantly, if you want to connect with like-minded individuals and professional service providers, pick our speakers' brains, float questions to them, get them answered on the spot, you'll be able to do all of this and more, either in person or in the streaming chat room. Hop over to summit.realestate.jp and grab your tickets today.
This event is brought to you by our awesome sponsors, Shiki Properties, Innovatius, Axolotl Capital, and Kaku Accounting. And we are very grateful for them because they enable us to keep improving the event for you time after time, expand it and add to it while keeping it all affordable for you. We couldn't have done that without our sponsors, so big thanks from us to them. Okay, so for today's episode, this is a pretty long one. Two back-to-back conversations with potential clients, one of them actually an existing client by now. The first one is pretty short, just under 30 minutes, and is with a lovely couple who would like to purchase an investment property in Japan, but one that they could also turn into a family home when they move here, as they plan to do in about 10 or 15 years. And so we talk about what a hybrid property like that would look like, something that could be generating good and headache-free yields on the one hand, but also be comfortable enough for them to convert into a home down the track. So we talk about the advantages and disadvantages of various property profiles, how the age of the structure can affect investment yield and price over time. We then discuss short-term and monthly rentals and how these work here in Japan, which locations might be more suitable for either of these, and what the expected yields might look like. And we also talk about what Japanese tenants, or guests in the case of shorter-term rentals, would be expecting from a property that they're renting. And finally, a bit of a chat on how to search for potential listings, how to remit funds into and out of Japan, and the other logistics involved. So enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again at the end of it to tell you about the next one coming up right after this.
And we know it's a place we would potentially like to retire. We're not, you know, retirement is not imminent for us, but like Dave said, in the next 10 to 15 years. So, but right now the prices are right and the dollar is strong and rates. So that's why we're trying to figure out if it makes sense to do this sooner rather than later.
Yep. Understood. So the goal is to have a place for you to come and stay while you're holidaying as a first criteria, and then maybe potentially rent it out when you're not using it. Or do you want to buy it with the tenant already? I guess if you're buying something with a tenant already in it, an old wooden house, we haven't discussed your budget yet, but an older wooden house would probably not be the best investment asset of choice. They're
right.
Not really built to last in Japan, non-durable material. So once they get past 30, 40 years, you start looking at, you know, fluctuating expenses. Like you'll have 5-6 years where everything's okay, then the roof goes $20,000, then termite protection renewal $6,000. So on average, maybe somewhere between $2,000 to $4,000 a year and just annual maintenance and repairs.
Okay.
Even if it's not structurally compromised to begin with. So obviously, if you're buying something older, we'll put in a structural inspection as a condition on the offer. But if the goal is to just buy a property with a long-term tenant in there and just collect cash, and then, you know, if and when they move out, maybe use the property yourselves, I would maybe advise to consider a condo instead of a house.
Mm-hmm.
They come with far less headaches.
That sounds good. Yeah, this is where we don't know. I mean, we have only ever owned older houses in the US. It's what we love. And obviously owning an older house. So we're very aware of the ongoing maintenance needs of older houses. Our house here was built.
They're flimsier here though. So you can expect, expect expenses on average to be higher. Yeah, they're not built. They're really not built to last here. Unless it's a 200-year-old traditional samurai farmhouse, those were built to last. But then everything you do need to repair on those, you have to get the special artisans in there, and that also costs more. So
right. The
typical townhouse, modern, post-World War II construction in Japan is not very durable.
So we're kind of open. This is, like I said, we've never even thought about doing this before, and all of a sudden we found a place in a city we loved, and we would love to spend some time there, at least in retirement, if not before. Our family loved it. We have two boys. They loved it. And yeah, so.
So Kyoto is definitely our preferred location, or did you all love other locations in Japan as well?
We just did Kyoto, Tokyo, and Osaka. And I think, for retirement, you know, we could probably only be there like 3 to 6 months out of the year, but we'd like to do that in Kyoto. Does it make any sense to like have an asset now in Japan with a tenant, and then once we get close to retirement, sell that and purchase a new asset?
It does.
It does definitely. So if we're looking at strictly investment properties, though, I wouldn't limit ourselves to Kyoto. We'll go for all of the major city centers and look for a condo unit within 10-minute walk to a station, building that was constructed, you know, 30 years and younger on purchase. And then depending on how old it was on purchase, as it gets closer to 40, I'll start considering reselling it and recycling the money into something else. Because once these, they're concrete, they're obviously better built than wooden structures, but once they hit 40, the building fees will start going up more rapidly because they will require more frequent maintenance and repairs. And then yield starts to decline because rents haven't really gone up in Japan significantly in the last 12 to 15 years. So as long as rent doesn't go up, but building fees do go up, obviously your yield will keep shrinking over time. And once they hit 40 years, it's going to shrink more rapidly. And that's also when investors buying them from you will be thinking about the same thing. So they'll offer less money for it. So as if we can aim for a good, well-located condo unit within 10-minute walk to a station in any major city, yield of maybe 5 to 6% before tax, if we're lucky, depending on the location and how old it is, and 30 years or younger on purchase, then that's the typical investment property that we would normally recommend to our clients. But depending on your budget, if you have like you could actually buy a small multi-unit building in reasonable locations at around, starting at around 40 million yen. We haven't discussed your budget yet, but if that's within your budget, that's what, 320,000 US now? You could potentially also look at a multi-unit building, which gives you more income streams, more diversity, and more flexibility, because if you own the entire structure, it's a lot easier to get a license for short-term stay. You can definitely rent them out by the month to commercial tenants. Stuff that you can't do if you own a single condo in an owner union situation.
So you said it might potentially be easier if we were interested in doing any short-term, you know, Airbnb type rentals. It may be easier, obviously, in other cities. How easy is it in other places like Osaka?
Osaka City is a designated short-term stay friendly municipality. So the national legislation around the country lets you, unless you apply for a hotel license, but then you'll have to set up a company. So assuming casual short-term stay license, nationally in Japan, you'll only be able to rent it out 180 days, so half the year. And then you could try to make up with monthly rentals the rest of the year, because monthly rentals are not, they're just normal rentals by law. They're not legally there's no compliance involved. But in Osaka specifically, and in Chiba City as well, if you want to stay closer to Tokyo, you can do that 365 days a year.
Okay.
And they generally put less hurdles in the way of people applying for a license. They'll still have some licensing requirements. For example, depending on the municipality, some of them will say you can't be within a certain distance to a school. So, you know, there's no amount of renovation that we can do to fix that. But it will be a lot easier in Chiba City and Osaka City specifically. But short-term stays and even monthly stays, you'll need more mental bandwidth, because you'll constantly have check-ins, check-outs, occupancy rates, vacancy rates, try to tweak the income to attract, you know, more guests, see what the competition is doing. So there's a property manager there who'll do all of that for you, but you will need to make a lot more decisions on a more frequent basis. A long-term rental is set and forget kind of thing.
Right.
You just make decisions whenever a tenant moves out, which could be every 5-6 years, something of that sort. And then within a few months, you don't need to think about it again.
Yeah.
If a tenant does turn over, is that an opportunity for us to use it as a vacation property? Just
yeah, absolutely. Once they move out, we don't have to rent it out again.
Okay. Yeah, this is.
But I mean, the cash cows tend to be smaller than what you might be comfortable with. You said that you're coming in with kids, right?
Yeah, two kids.
Yeah, we had two boys.
So you need at least a 2-bedroom plus living / dining area, right?
Right.
Those would be lower on yield if we get to maybe 5%, if we're lucky, maybe 4 and a bit.
Okay. Yeah, this is all really helpful, because I guess we hadn't really thought about if we wanted to do something somewhere.
But the question is, do you, because you mentioned originally, you mentioned holiday home. So I was assuming you, whatever property it is, you want to use it once or twice a year or whatever it is, right?
I think ultimately we'd like to, whether or not that's realistic in the next couple of years is hard to say. Our kids are 15 and 10. So,
okay,
you know,
so 3 to 6 months a year with the kids is not really feasible unless they're homeschooled, right? Okay.
No, so that's gonna be in the future once we're retired.
Okay, in that case, yeah, it's not a bad idea to
A
have
handful of weeks
something.
a year at best.
Well,
Right.
if you're, like you said, the yen is low now. I mean, not as low as it was a year ago, but still pretty low. If you purchase something now, put your money in yens, getting, I mean, pick a property that you would be comfortable in if and when it becomes vacant. So something a little bit bigger than like a studio or a one bedroom apartment. And then, you know, if we even get 4 or 4.5% on it, you're definitely retaining your value. And then you can use it when a tenant moves out. Or if they don't move out, then, you know, when it becomes a bit older, you can sell it as is with the tenant in there to somebody else and look for the next property.
Yeah, I think that's something we hadn't
Yeah.
necessarily thought about as much, which definitely makes anything, you know, makes things, sorry, locations outside of Kyoto a real possibility.
Yeah, and then
Yeah,
the
no, it's
money
not
you
that.
get, the money you
Yeah,
get
it's
in
not
rental
critical.
income, you can use for your holidays when you do come here, whether it's, you know, for a month or what, and just stay in Airbnb or something with the family using that rental money. You'll have money here in Japan, so you won't have to exchange.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
true.
That's a great idea.
You forget we're American. We don't get a month off for vacation for
No,
holiday. We get
Japanese
almost
don't either.
nothing.
It's good that you're not, it's good that you're flexible with it, with your plans. You know, you're not, we have customers that know must be a house. We must be able to rent it out Airbnb from day one. And then it takes a lot more. We have to be do a lot more research into it in advance and make sure that it complies with everything. But in your case, it sounds like you're a bit more flexible about it. So we can just aim for the best investment property that we can find that you'd also potentially want to consider living in yourselves, right?
Yeah, that sounds good. And I think Osaka would be good too, because yeah, like you said, it's close to Kyoto and we liked Osaka. So
We did. We in
yeah.
fact, we were disappointed we didn't have more time in Osaka. We were only there for a couple of days.
The food is amazing there, my friend.
Well,
The food in Japan.
we're
Yeah.
foodies, as are our
Yeah.
boys. So we there was a lot left to be said there. And just that part of the country we really enjoyed. Although I mean we're kind of open. Like I said,
Well,
this is just
Kyoto and Osaka are smack in the middle of Japan, and Osaka
Yeah.
also has the international airport. That's an added bonus there. You get direct flights coming in, right?
Yes. The only direct flights from our city here in Denver is to Tokyo. But those
Ah,
flights are
okay.
also so incredibly expensive that we ended up not taking a direct flight even when we visited. So,
Well, Tokyo would be expensive. And to be honest, Chiba City is short-term stay friendly, but I don't know that you'd want a holiday in Chiba City. It's not that exciting. It's kind of, I mean, it's there. It's conveniently located to the airport in Tokyo, but that's really all the good things I have to say about
Right.
it.
Yeah,
Osaka is a
well,
lot more interesting from my perspective, at
it's
least.
you know a couple hours by train and you're in Tokyo for a weekend
Yep.
or whatever.
Yeah.
Like that's, I mean, we love Tokyo too. I just don't think it's probably where we're thinking we might
Yeah.
land longer term in retirement. Like it's not a relaxing
Well, you
retirement.
get far less bang for your buck in Tokyo too. Osaka is a lot cheaper on, at least if you get a little bit suburban, it's a lot cheaper, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, this is partially why we're looking too, is real estate in Japan is just generally extremely cheap compared to where we're at in Denver right
Yeah.
now. So if we, that's what we're thinking, if we, you know, end up eventually selling our place once we retire, having we can easily probably at that point have a place somewhere in Japan and somewhere else that we kind of.
When I sold my property in Melbourne in Australia, I mean, that was back 12, 13 years ago. They're a lot pricier here now, but we bought, I think, 10 or 12 units for the price of that single house that we sold.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, we're just looking online and we see properties that cost, I mean, there's literally nothing here. A studio, empty land, there's nothing in the city of Denver for those prices. Even in the suburbs, there's just nothing. So, that's
Well,
part of what
budget wise, where do you stand at the moment? I mean, I
our
wouldn't, investment properties of the type that we've discussed, I don't, I mean, there are some available that are cheaper, but I would probably start looking at least 8, 9 million yen to get something that would attract decent quality tenants in a good enough location and not too old kind of thing.
You've
So
been doing this
did you
for
have a rough idea on budget?
a while. Yeah, I think we could probably do up to like 120 to 130 US.
US. Including cost or just the listing price?
Yeah, I'll kind of all in all the costs.
all in all the costs. So that gives us about 19. Sorry?
I don't know. Apparently, we did not discuss budget before this meeting, which we probably should have done.
That's a good idea to get into when you're talking real estate.
Maybe 20 million yen. Do you think that's we could get subject for that?
What is that?
Okay, so 20 million yen, including costs, puts us at about 130 US at the moment. So that means the listing price is about 16.5 million yen. That's very reasonable for an investment property. That's not a problem. Again, not in Tokyo though.
How does
but that's not a building though, it'll have to be a condo unit. For a building you'll need to at least double that.
Okay.
How do furnishings work? Like if we had a long-term tenant, do we furnish it or do they furnish
usually
it?
Not unless you happen to be buying right next to a university, in which case, you know, students who are especially foreign students, if they're only coming in for a couple of years, they appreciate a furnished unit. But otherwise, typical Japanese tenants would expect, I mean, aircon units would need to be there, but otherwise they'd expect to just furnish it themselves. They don't want your stuff.
So that's basically the same as here. Yeah.
Is it?
So
that okay.
If we were to use it when a tenant moved out, there wouldn't be any furniture in it.
I mean, there'll be wear and tear on the interior. You'll have to spruce it up between tenants, but not on any appliances or equipment yet.
Yeah.
So that's why.
And if we did do a short, like a Airbnb, it would be
then furnished. You'd be furnishing it and you'd need to constantly replace anything that wears and tears. Yeah. Okay. Same with monthly rentals, by the way. Even if you're doing anything that's not long-term, fixed-term contracts, monthly rentals, serviced apartment, short-term rentals, all of those would require furniture and appliances.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't furnish them the way you like it. I'd let the property managers decide what would be attractive to guests, and you guys live with it when you use the property. It's going to be quite comfortable, usually. No, I wouldn't worry about it.
And that again, and that's something that you would be able to help us with, is to help find the right property manager to help us, whether it's a shorter term or longer term rental. Okay.
Yeah, with short and medium term, I can refer you to property management, because short and medium term rental companies usually cater to foreign guests as well. Mm-hmm. So they would always have English speakers in house. So I can put you directly in touch with them and they'll be able to service you directly. If at any point they don't do a good job, let us know and we'll step in. But otherwise, you probably won't need us for management. For long-term leases, the property managers are more traditional Japanese. So there you'll probably need a middleman like ourselves managing the managers kind of thing.
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah. Man, we have a lot more to think about now.
Yeah, back to the drawing board, I was going to say.
Well, not back to the drawing board. I mean, well, as Dave said, it never even occurred to us to do something like this, but we're actually getting to, you know, be that age where we should start thinking about where we want to retire. And especially with the dollar being what it is, and well, needless to say, a whole lot of us Americans are very unsure about what's going to happen in the next year or so.
Yeah. I would get a Wise account for each of you and start converting your money into yens now.
Okay.
I mean, there's no point not capitalizing on the rates. Let me give you a referral link so we'll both get some bonuses. Give me a second. Well, I'll give you a referral link for both.
Is this like a local bank account, or is it just an exchange account, or what is that?
It's a foreign exchange account. Don't let your bank convert your dollars into yen for you, because they'll rip you off by about 3 to 5 yen to the dollar. So for a budget like this, you're talking about a few thousand dollars lost just by letting the bank exchange the funds. Wise are the best and easiest way for smaller remittances under 1 million yen. But with Wise, they'll also let you hold money in the account. So you could, you know, whenever you've got some extra dollars, you could convert them into yens if the rates are attractive, and they'll be kept in Wise account. You can even get a debit card issued from Wise so that when you're in Japan, you can use that for shopping and stuff.
Oh, nice.
Doesn't work everywhere though, so don't you know, have a backup option, but it's a good service to have. OFX, which is another one that we use, are much better for bigger transfers. So when you're actually purchasing the property, you'll be needing to transfer let's say 20 million yen roughly to the realtor, who will then be distributing it domestically to the seller, to the lawyer, to whoever needs to get paid. So when you're doing a big transfer, Wise are not a financial institution officially in Japan. They don't have, so they can't do transfers into and out of Japan of above 1 million yen, or they can, but it's not very cost effective. They have to do it in multiple transfers. So OFX are a service that are used that is used for bigger property transactions. And then you, it also comes, if you sign in through our referral link, it'll come with a corporate account manager. So with Wise or other services, if something goes wrong or you're not sure where the money is or a delay, you have to contact the call center and wait for somebody to get back to you. And with OFX, because they deal with bigger transfers, you'll have a dedicated account manager to email the same person and get things sorted out always, which is very handy. So I'll just reply to your latest email.
Yeah, I was looking at OFX because of you had it linked in the document you guys sent me. If we're putting stuff in a Wise account, can we ever move it from the Wise account to the OFX account?
Yeah, of course. From Wise, you can from Wise you can exchange it to other currencies, send it anywhere you want. It's not a problem.
Okay.
It's not going to be an OFX account. What you'll do is you'll transfer. OFX, there's no account. OFX, you tell them funds are coming from here and please send them to this account over there, and they'll send it to whatever third party in Japan that you want them to send to, but they can't let you hold it.
Okay.
So you'll be holding your money in Wise in Japanese yen, and then either do multiple transfers through Wise to whoever needs to receive the funds on the other end, or just transfer everything to OFX, and then OFX will transfer it to Japan for you.
Okay.
But I mean, the main point is just convert your dollars into yens now. That's the important bit before the rates flip the other way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As much as you can.
We're very unsure what might happen with the dollar when we have any president. So, yeah.
I can tell you that I have a lot of US customers who are suddenly speeding up their purchase process with this latest election results. Some people seem to be a bit concerned.
Some elections, you know exactly what to expect and where things are likely to head. And this one is a wild card. We have no idea what might happen.
Well, makes things interesting, doesn't it? Forex provider sign up links. Okay, so I've emailed you with those two. We still got time, but just maybe set up the accounts. If there's any issues with any of them, well, with Wise, I can't do much, but if there's any issue with OFX, let me know and I'll loop in the account manager.
Yeah. Well, and this has given us a good thoughts of, you know, because like the properties we were looking at in Kyoto are probably not the right ones for us to be looking at right now necessarily, because we would just be purchasing them and letting them sit because we wouldn't.
We can always try to rent a holiday home in Kyoto out by the month. If we're lucky, we might, you know, depending on location, right. But it has to be attractive to short-term stay guests. So that budget in central Kyoto will be older, dilapidated. Kyoto. Yeah, right?
Yeah, I know.
So there'll be a lot of work to put into it.
But it sounds like it's different in Japan. That's good to know, actually, because we kept reading that the Japanese tend to, you know, it was always translated as they tend to not like older houses, but you're telling us there's good reason that older houses are trickier there, as opposed to here, 100-year-old houses are built to last, right? That makes a lot of sense. Okay.
I'm not sure where this started. I think it's a bit of a combination between, you know, oh, there's going to be earthquakes and typhoons anyway, so no point of making them that durable. And, you know, why not get people to buy a new house every 30 years? It's good for the construction companies. So I think it was a bit of a mix. But anyway, yeah, post-World War II, they started to try and save money as much as they could, and they haven't really moved away from that. In the last 10 years, we see a little bit more sturdy homes, some more bricks, concrete occasionally. But you're buying something a bit older than that, so it's still going to be flimsy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that helps us sort of think about our where we're looking and targeting things too. So I don't know. You've
got more questions. Well, investment property. How have you been searching for property listings so far? Which website's on?
I signed up for that Cheap Houses Japan newsletter.
Yep.
So I'm going through their links.
Are you on Akia Mart at all?
No.
You know, no. Let me send you. Actually, I'll send it on WhatsApp. I'm not sure why I sent you an email there. WhatsApp is easier. Send you, first of all, those referral links here.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And then the Akia Mart, I mean, they're not really for investment properties, but if you still want to look at the holiday homes, that's the best place I know of to search in English. They just scrape all of the major Japanese property websites and put it in like a Zillow Redfin format with a map and drill down and filters and everything you used to.
That's what we need.
I'll give you a discount code for that one as well if you end up subscribing with them, but it's pretty cheap anyway. But if you're looking for investment properties, it's probably best to let us and the realtors do the search for you, because those are on 100% Japanese. I mean, you can still work the websites with Google Translate. I can give you those two as well if you want, but normally it's best to let the agents search for those. So the two websites I'm going to put in the chat now are strictly for investment properties. So they put all of the information in a central location, which is easier to search. And then you can use Google Translate, or I don't know, I use the Microsoft browser Edge, and that lets me just right click and just translate everything to English. Yeah. But it's not going to be super professional translation. So
Right. But it's best it
it does the job, but there'll be a lot of stuff that probably won't do that well. Okay, so this is, why are you doing this to me? Oh, I know why you're doing this to me. It's my fault. There we go. So this is one of them, Kenbia. And the other one is Rakumachi. Rakumachi is the bigger one, but there will be some listings that only show on one and not on the other. So it's a good idea to check both of them.
Oh, interesting.
But stick to the criteria we've mentioned. Yeah, 10-minute walk to a station, 30 years or younger, and then the rest of the information will work out when we do the due diligence on them.
Great.
But yeah, any point you feel like you're ready to move forward with anything, let me know, and we'll kick off a conversation with some realtors and get started.
Awesome. This has been super helpful. We've got a lot to think about. We didn't know that short-term rentals were so limited in Kyoto and all of those things, right? So sort of we just need to figure out what our game plan is, at least for the next handful of years. And then, but it sounds like even just an investment property to help us get to where we want to be long-term might be wise too. So,
yeah.
And like you said, I mean, there's no point just having money sit in an account unless it's gaining, you know, substantial interest. So it's not a bad idea to, you know, convert it to yen while the yen is low and invest in something.
I think that sounds great.
All right.
Yeah.
Keep me posted. We're here.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yes. So good strategic conversation there. As I've mentioned to them, being flexible is a great bonus for potential buyers like themselves, because it enables them to be open to more attractive opportunities and avoid more of the potential hassles, which you might get with a more narrow focus and less flexibility. Hope you've enjoyed that little call. Now on to the next one. And this one's a bit longer, about an hour in total. I speak to a Singapore-based couple who are looking for a strictly investment property and on a relatively low budget. So they are laser focused on short-term rentals, and it has to be a house. They wanted to know how everything works logistically, the purchase process, licensing requirements, and research involved in that. What's the right order in which to do things? When should remote viewings and structural inspections be scheduled, and how these work? Which municipalities are more open and friendly towards short-term rental businesses, like the one they're planning to start? And then we jump into some live analysis and due diligence on both locations and various property listings. So you might want to hop over to our YouTube channel so you can see what we're looking at as we speak. We'll link to that video in the show notes. As we review those listings, we also have a good long chat about the balance between older and cheaper properties, which would come with more renovation and repair requirements, as opposed to newer and pricier ones that are in better condition. We discuss the feasibility of renting out properties that are in managed resorts and come with an owner union and management company in place, how to work with short-term stay management companies, and finally, a bit more of a meta conversation about the difference in pace between Japan and other countries, particularly when it comes to the real estate sector. So a really good deep dive into the short-term stay and Airbnb segment of the market here. Have a listen, and I'll see you again one last time on the other side of this one. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiamart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiamart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiamart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akia-mart.com. That's A-K-I-Y-A-M-A-R-T, akia-mart.com, and kick off your search today. Without video or without the... Or at least without the video of the listings. Okay, yes, sorry, go ahead. Sorry, you were saying that you were watching the YouTube channel, yeah?
Yeah. I watched your one with Shu, your one with Akiamart guys. A lot, yeah. So, but mainly because we are looking for a holiday home. I think you have heard this a lot, holiday home, and as well as hoping to rent this out on Airbnb or short-term rentals. So I think that is our focus point. And yes, we do have the funds. We do have the cash on hand. We started off with a lower amount, but of course, we can always, you know, revise that upwards if need be. We have a range, but of course, depending on the location, you know, the land cost, the renovation needs, and all that, we can always play around with that. We are here to actually seek your advice and consultation. Thank you for doing this with us. I mean, a lot of them may not have time for us, but you know, you do have set aside time for us, but.
That's what we're here for.
We do have property listings, yeah, that we are interested in, really. Yeah.
Okay. Well, just before we dig into the listings themselves, you mentioned for both investment and personal use as a holiday home. So I'm assuming what you mean is you're going to be using it when you're here, and then when you're not here, you want to try to rent it out short term, right?
I would say let's flip that around. We would like to rent it out as a primary opportunity to rent it out as an Airbnb. And okay. Stay only when there is opportunity, when there are gaps in the tenancy period.
Okay, so the prime criteria is to be renting it out.
Exactly.
And does it have to be a house? I mean, you're the boss, we'll help you buy whatever you want, but from a maintenance perspective on long-term, if you want stable and well-known expenses without any surprises, a condo would work better for that.
Yeah, we are looking for a house because we kind of like the veneer design. We kind of like to be creative with like the exterior a little bit here and there. We want to do some renovations inside as well. We kind of prefer that, you know, landed.
Okay, but house. Do you prefer it to the tune of because your budget is pretty low, which means I mean we can expand it a little bit. You mentioned, but still. I'm assuming it's going to be under 10 million yen, which means the house is going to be relatively old. And houses that are past 30, definitely past 40 years of age, which is what we'll be looking at, will come with an average of 3,000-4,000 US a year in maintenance repairs, even if the structural the structure is intact, which we'll figure that out with a structural inspection. But even if the structural is completely intact, and it's not going to be completely intact, but doesn't have any major issues, still on average, I mean, you'll have 5-6 years, everything's okay. Then the roof goes suddenly 20,000, termite protection needs to be renewed 6,000. So on average, we normally factor in for older houses about $3,000-4,000 a year in annual maintenance and repairs on average. So are you okay with that?
Yeah. We are okay.
And then if you have a garden or a backyard, depending on how big and how complex it is, that also adds a few hundred dollars a month in landscaping and gardening, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So with that in mind, the first step, because your prime criteria is to be able to rent it out short term, then the first step would be to any potential. So basically the way the process would normally work is we'd have the potential listings, then we'd schedule a viewing and have somebody view them in person for us. And then we'll make an offer pending a structural inspection, and then we'll pay for the structural inspection. And if everything's okay and we green light it, we'll move ahead to the purchase. But if the prime criteria is to short-term stay, to rent it out short-term, then before we start putting money into viewings and structural inspection, the first step would be to provide the listing to a short-term stay research and management company. Yeah. We'll need to pay them 20,000 yen, so about 100 and a bit US, for the first property in every municipality, and then 10,000 yen for subsequent properties in that same municipality. And they'll provide a detailed report about how likely it is for the property to qualify for the requirements for a short-term stay license. There's two kinds of licenses. They'll look into both of them. And then, so we only pay before, because remote viewing, depending on where the property is, can cost somewhere between, let's say, 30,000 yen to 100,000 yen, depending on how far we need to go and how long we need to stay there. So before we spend that kind of money, it's probably cheaper to first verify whether the property will get a license or not.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand that, reading all your and watching all your YouTube videos, I felt that that component about making sure that all the licenses, the Minpaku, what is it?
Okay. Because you said 10 episodes. I wasn't sure which episodes you watched, if you got that far or not. Okay.
Many, many.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that would be the first criteria. I think that would be key, you know, for us to ascertain whether that house, that area, that township is available for like 365 days a year. We can rent out 180 days. So I think that would be the key thing. Yeah. So I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Well, if you want to have a higher likelihood of being able out to rent out 365 days a year, because the casual short-term stay license, which is called the Minpaku license, will only let you rent out for 180 days a year.
Yep.
To go to the 365, you'll need a hotel license. And to get a hotel license, you'll need to set up a Japanese corporate structure, right? So those come, again, with $3,000-$4,000 a year in corporate upkeep, minimum corporate tax, accounting, bookkeeping. In Osaka City and Chiba City specifically, the municipality allows 365 days even on a casual Minpaku license.
Okay, that's cool.
So if 365 is a requirement, then we'd better focus on those two cities. But
yeah,
I mean,
it's pretty
hard to keep a Airbnb style property populated more than half the year. I'm not sure whether that's I know that Chiba City and Osaka City were not in your list of locations. So we can look there if you don't mind for your holiday home to also be there. But for 180 sure. days might work as well, because I mean, you'll be using it for a month or two a year. And, you know, 2-3 months vacancy is quite normal for a short-term stay property.
Sounds good. Yeah. In fact, I actually looked through Chiba as well. I have listings in Chiba.
And Chiba City, not the entire prefecture. Yeah.
Oh, Chiba City.
Chiba City. Has to be Chiba City or Osaka City.
Ah, I see. So we're talking about, let's say, Kagoshima area, like
not
southern Chiba. That's not.
I'll show you the map.
Okay.
Not the not down southeast where the surf spots are. This is more inland. Chiba City itself. So Chiba City. Let me just share my screen. This area here, right?
Okay.
That's so the official boundaries of Chiba City. Within these boundaries, you can rent out for 365 days, even on a casual license.
Okay.
But Chiba City, to be perfectly honest, is pretty boring. Osaka City is a lot more exciting.
Yeah. Agree, yeah. We're open to Osaka City as well, although I did not do a lot of research on Osaka City because I was mainly focusing on Chiba, Karuizawa, Atami, as well as Kyushu. So these are areas that I know you're based in Fukuoka, right?
Yeah, we work all over the country. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, you're the boss. If you the thing is, every property that we'll investigate with a short-term stay research company will also cost a couple of hundred bucks. So
we should probably focus on one municipality at a time so that if we have to check more than one property, it's not going to be that expensive, right?
Agree.
So which one do you want to start with?
Let's start off with Chiba because I have about three or four listings that I'm looking at in that area. Okay. Before we go to that, can we just quickly get just a recap and run through of your how we can engage you? What is like kind of the rules of engagement between ourselves and also your company? Sure. How do we start?
Yeah. So you've read through our explanation of services document, which Faye forwarded.
Roughly. It was very long.
Seven pages. Come on, they get a lot longer when we'll actually buy a property. Okay, so basically the way we would normally work is you'd give us an authority to represent you in Japan, and then we would be doing everything on your behalf. So we'll do the research, the due diligence, we'll negotiate with the seller, we'll sign the documents, attend all the meetings, organize a structural inspection, review the report. So you just have to make bottom line decisions, and you just need to speak to us, right? With a single point of contact. And then we charge a fixed percentage based on the budget or the price of the property. That we cannot do until about the middle of next year, I think, early or middle next year, where we're desperately looking for a bookkeeper to catch up on our backlogs. So until we've done that, we're not going to be able to do the full purchase facilitation. What we have been doing and can continue to do until then is we'll put you directly in touch with a foreigner-friendly realtor who will be able to handle the logistics of the purchase remotely in English on your behalf, same as we would have done. Realtors being realtors, though, they're not going to be super strategic, like the kind of conversation that we just had about potential locations and older property and cheaper property and what you want to watch out for and how you want to save money. That kind of conversation they're not going to have with you. Their job is to help research if you need them to, or they work with listings that you give them, and then they help facilitate the purchase. They're transactional. That's what they're there for. So we've been coming on as consultants for a few hundred bucks, which is also a lot cheaper than having us do everything. And then we hold your hand as you work with the agent. We guide the agent on what due diligence we want to make sure they perform. We review the documents before you sign them. Just make sure you're not, you know, raise red flags about potential property. Just make sure you're not making any costly mistakes. So that we can do at any time. Whenever you want to get started, we can do that. If you want us to do everything on your behalf, it'll have to be next year.
Got it. Yeah. Because when I was watching your video, you mentioned that you were freed up in January in Q1 this year. Next year, sorry.
We were hoping to, but we haven't found the bookkeeper yet. I'm sorry. We've gone. Okay, it's a nightmare. We've gone through like five or six bookkeepers in the last 2 years. Half of them didn't speak English well enough. Half of them couldn't handle the stress, and it's just a nightmare. And we're in Fukuoka City. There's not that many bilingual professionals here, so it's been. We're still on the search. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. Yeah. No worries. Okay. So you mentioned there is a fixed fee. That we would engage you for, and then the agent fee would be a separate one, right? There'd be a brokerage fee, am I right to say? Or is it
It's also a percentage based on the price of the property. So the realtors in Japan charge, the formula is 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax, which works out to be usually between 4 to 5 and a bit percent. But they do have a minimum. So even if the property is less than 8 million yen, they still charge that formula of 8 million yen. So that works out to be 330,000 yen is the minimum. And then if the property is more than 8 million yen, then it'll just be that formula again, whichever is higher.
Okay. All right.
And our fee for full purchase facilitation, if it's a house, our minimum is 500,000 yen plus tax. So 550.
Okay. If let's say we go with the former, which is, you know, the less expensive route, roughly, how would that work? Yeah.
So we would charge you for a 10-hour retainer, which is 66,000 yen, so about 500 US. And then we'll kick off. That usually suffices for a single property purchase, unless you're super picky. In your case, I don't think you're super picky, but the budget is fairly restrictive. But I think we haven't had a case where we had to go beyond 10 hours. 10 hours usually more than suffices for a single purchase. And then we'll kick off a chat group, a WhatsApp chat group with, depending on which location we're looking at, whichever agent is, would be most available and more reasonable to use for that location so that they don't have to charge too much when they go for viewings and signing meetings and whatnot. And then we'll work with them. So we'll provide them with the listings that we found or you found, and we'll ask them, if we don't find anything interesting, we'll ask them to research based on your criteria. They'll give us the listings. We'll ask them to contact the selling agent. find out about any known issues, possibility of when we can schedule the viewing. And then depending on where the property is, we'll either send somebody from our office in Fukuoka, or we'll send somebody from Tokyo, or we'll send somebody from Osaka. Those are the three major locations where we've got people to mobilize.
Okay.
And then somebody will go and view the property on our behalf. They will be charging 4,000 yen plus tax. So 4,400 yen per hour that they spend on site and commuting.
4,000 yen, right?
4,400 yen. That's about 30 US.
No matter where the location is?
But the hours will be longer if they have to travel far. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then for time spent on the Shinkansen or on an airplane, they will charge at half that rate because they can kind of work during that time. But once they hit the ground and they need to start taking local trains and they need to be on site at the property, then they'll charge by the hour.
Okay. So it's 4,400 yen for just organizing one viewing plus?
For one hour. To get to a viewing and spend time at a viewing could take 3, 4, 5 hours, depending on where they're going. So it's always a good idea, if they have to travel out of their city, it's always a good idea to line up 3, 4, 5 viewings so that, you know, we're making better use of their time and money.
Fair enough. Okay. I got two questions before we can go into like the listings. Do you have agents that focus on, are specialized in certain areas where we can depend on? And if, let's say, we don't feel comfortable with this agent, do you have a network of them that we can, you know, pull strings on? And
yes, you know, we have quite a few agents. To be perfectly honest, the best and most efficient agents that we work with are based in Tokyo. That's where we can find good multilingual agents that can, and they will serve countrywide, and they do have their own more traditional Japanese connections in each city that they can mobilize as well. So
I see. Okay.
It's most likely going to be a Tokyo agent, I assume. If it's in Kyushu, then we have a couple of good Fukuoka-based agents that we can work with as well. In Osaka, Kyoto, Nara, we have one bilingual agent that we trust, but they're a little bit picky. I don't think they'll go for properties as cheap as what you're looking at.
Okay.
So it might be a Tokyo agent, and the Tokyo agent, when the time comes for a viewing, the Tokyo agent will then contact their colleagues in that particular city or the closest big city to it and ask them to go and do the viewing for us so that we're not spending too much of your money.
Sounds good. I happen to have a trip planned already on the third week of January.
And which week, sorry?
Third week of January. So we're third looking week. At okay. the 13th to about 22nd, whereby I'm ready to, like, I mean, the main purpose is for me to go and see homes. So I'm that's how serious I am. I'm hoping that we can line up something. Is that too far away? I mean, is it too close, sorry?
Normally, I would say that's fine. We usually ask to give us about a month in advance. But the problem is that now with the holiday season, everyone's kind of off between Christmas and the second week of January.
Oh, okay.
So I can't tell you until we start making inquiries. I mean, between our buyer side agent and the listing agents who are actually listing those properties, I don't know. I don't know to tell you if that scheduling will definitely work or not. We can definitely try.
Okay.
But bear in mind that even when you're here, a lot, I'd say even most of the listing agents are not going to be comfortable dealing with you on their own. They'll request that somebody join from the buyer side. So it's not going to reduce the cost of having somebody, needing somebody to go for the viewings, because they will need to accompany you. Unless you're fluent in Japanese.
No.
Yeah. So the listing agents will be a bit iffy about meeting foreigners on their own, unfortunately. Most of them. Occasionally we'll land on one who is a bit more experienced, but most of them will ask that somebody join you.
Okay. In that case, is there anyone on your site who will come with us? Or, I mean, how would that work?
Yeah, same kind of deal. So depending on location, if it's in Kyushu, we'll come. If it's in other places, we'll get the agent that we're working with to send one of their colleagues. Same sort of thing.
Sounds good. Okay. I think babe, do you have any questions to ask Ziv?
Not at the moment.
We'll have a lot more Q&A when we're actually looking at properties. You'll see how it goes in a minute. Pardon me.
No problem. In terms of up and coming, you know, areas, townships, you would say in terms of like where the Japanese government is trying to like bring tourism to, you know, spending, fiscal spending on that area and driving tourism there, where strategically, where do you find the best areas to look into investing in property and also Airbnb and short term? What are your thoughts on that?
It's a bit tricky in the sense that, like many things in Japan, there's this huge gap between the official national government policy and the local municipalities. So, I mean, the Japanese government can say that they want to beef up tourism in Himeji Prefecture, for example, but if the local municipality is not cooperative and not providing any English services to people landing there and making it difficult for people to set up Airbnb operations, then it's not going to work, right? So,
yeah,
it's hard to say. I mean, Kyoto City is super popular, but they've had enough of us tourists. They've made it very difficult to actually get short-term stay licenses there. Sapporo is popular, but the winters there can be very rough on maintenance and vacancies as well. I mean, again, Osaka City, Chiba City are short-term stay friendly municipalities, so those would be the easiest places to get a license in. Fukuoka government is doing fantastic work in promoting the city overseas, so if you are interested in Kyushu, that would be one of the best areas to hit, I would say. The legislation here is not particularly loose. It's not as loose as Kyoto, as Osaka City or Chiba City, but it's not difficult. I do have quite a few people who are setting up Airbnb operations in Fukuoka. That's doable. Anywhere like you wrote a couple of hours from Tokyo, so similar distance. I wouldn't say a couple of hours because that makes it a bit challenging for a lot of tourists, but within an hour, let's say, from Kyoto and Osaka is not a bad place to be.
Okay.
In Kyushu, I'm trying to think. Down towards.
I was looking at Kirishima. Kirishima and.
Karishima? I don't think I'm familiar. Kagoshima. Kirishima. Okay. Yeah. Kagoshima. So yeah. Kagoshima is here. Oh, sorry. I stopped sharing. That's the other. So let me share that again. Yeah, so Kagoshima down here and Miyazaki area, Miyazaki and Kumamoto as well. These areas, 1, 2, 3, are quite popular with tourists, especially Singaporeans like yourself. Southeast Asian tourists love Kumamoto and Miyazaki and Kagoshima.
Interesting.
Fukuoka City itself is very good. If we're very staying expensive. Around... you're not going to find 5 million yen properties here, but again, I would not advise to go for 5 million properties anyway. Itoshima is quite a lovely destination. It was voted second or third best small city in the world, I think, a couple of years ago by Monocle magazine. All galleries and cafes and beach parties in the summer. It's a very popular holiday spot. Otherwise, Nagasaki draws a fair bit of visitors every year. Where's Nagasaki? I lost you, Nagasaki. Oh, there it is. Nagasaki draws a fair few visitors every year. That's not a bad spot to hit as well. I think that's mainly it for Kyushu.
Yeah.
Hiroshima is kind of popular, but not as popular as the other spots we've just discussed, I think.
Interesting.
And beyond that, yeah, I'd stick to Osaka, Kyoto, Nara.
Yeah. Can I ask, you mentioned Osaka City is good, right? Very loose regulations policies. Do you
but also have... a lot of competition, yeah? Bear in mind, it's loose regulations. Yeah, it's one of the most, I think it's one of the top three destinations in Japan. So a lot of people have opened up short-term stay operations there.
For sure, yeah. For us Singaporeans, it's either Osaka or Tokyo. That's it, or Kyoto.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned that Singaporeans do go to places like Kumamoto, you know, Itoshima. They do, and
Fukuoka.
I don't hear from our fellow friends that we are going there. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got, number one, we've got a lot of customers from Singapore, so we regularly meet them here, and they always tell us that, you know, in some cases they don't even make it beyond Fukuoka, like they just make it a Kyushu holiday, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Okay. Many questions so far, or we can go into the listings?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, no, sorry, you're talking to Sherry. Listings. Yeah, okay. Can go into the listings.
I'm using Akiyama as if. And yeah, we were thinking whether we should go with them as well, but or go with you. But let's take it one step at a time.
Sure.
So I've kind of saved all my homes in categories based on prefecture or like township. And based on, I've got like maybe 50 listings in total, but I kind of shortlisted about 10 today for our discussion. But let's go from the 10, let's maybe just narrow down to like 3 or 4 that I think it's really, really something that I really want to pursue.
Sure.
So let's start off with Chiba first. There is a home in Katsura City, so near the beach, near Yuhara Beach, a lot of beaches around the area. Also near Kagawa SeaWorld, not too far, maybe a few minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes drive. We are looking at this listing, right? And it's a distance from the Onjuku station. However, there is quite nice views from here. I mean, it looks kind of not kept very well. People are just like leaving stuff outside your home. I think it's a previous owner. This is the view you get from the first floor. This is the second floor view. You see the beach. Of course, there's greenery that we can always do some landscaping. There's free parking allotted for this property as well. But I foresee, for myself, I think one advice that the Akiyama folks actually advise us is that, you know, look for a place that you see yourself living in it, and so the place that you like. And that could be one starting point for finding a place. So I see myself.
But you're saying, sorry, hang on a sec. But you're saying your prime criteria is rentals, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So if you're looking to make if you're looking to make a short-term stay hospitality investment and then also be able to use it when it's not in use, then I would focus on what would make the best short-term stay investment. If you're looking to have a holiday home that you can rent out when you happen to not be using it, then yes, I would definitely look for the dream home.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
And can you open the original listing, the Japanese realtor listing?
Yeah.
And then can you turn that to English for... Oh, it is English. Okay, perfect. So go down a bit. Down. Built 1988. Okay, pause here for a second. I'm not seeing the size of the structure. Do you have that above there, maybe? Maybe further down?
the size.
Do you want to maybe share the links in the chat and I'll open them here?
Yeah,
of course. Rather than you sharing them.
Sure. Just let me send that information that I took down as notes first. And then the second one is the listing.
Okay, so I'll get you to stop sharing and I'll do it on my end.
For sure.
They'll just be a bit faster. I've browsed through a few of those. And then I will share that. Okay, so 123. Okay, so typical Japanese family home sized. And then is it on Sidisu, steep slope collapse? Okay, so cliff ordinance means you'll need to build and religiously maintain a retaining wall in the back here. I'm assuming that's where the cliff they're referring to is. So there must be something there already. We're not seeing it now, but you will need to make sure that it's always there. And those can be a bit expensive to repair. We're also not seeing the interior, I'm assuming, because the owner is still living there. And I'm not seeing any mention of water supply and sewage situation. So we want to make sure it's on city water supply and that it's got a septic tank or connected to city sewage and not on a pumping sewage system, which is basically a stinky collection tank under the house. If it is that, you'll want to get rid of that and connect to a septic tank or city sewage. And that can be another 1 to 3 million yen or so on top of the property price. So just something to bear in mind.
Got it.
Otherwise, without knowing if it's on well water or not, without knowing if it's on a pump toilet or not, and without seeing interior photos, there's not much I can comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
But Katsudashi is... Sorry, let me just bring up... Katsuda City. Here. Okay, that could be attractive for surfers, I think.
Yeah.
Famous for surf, this area.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm assuming it would be seasonal, though. You're probably not going to get too many guests in the winter and autumn.
Exactly. And that's where we want to go and stay at that point in time.
Okay. Cool. So, I can't give you too much information. Give me the other listing.
Sure. Let me... Okay, this one is going to be... Wait, let me see. Where is that place? Chiba City. Okay, actually, the other one, right, is going to be in Karuizawa, actually.
Yep.
This one will be my top pick in Chiba. The rest will be in Karuizawa and in Mount Fuji area.
Okay. Yeah. Karuizawa will definitely get you tourist numbers.
Okay, let's give you one listing now. Give me a minute. This one seems to be on listings for some time but hasn't been bought. So I'm interested to know why no one has snatched this up yet.
Yep.
Okay, here we go.
Built in 1964 is one reason it's not being sold, because it's definitely having some structural issues at this age. Houses are not built to last in Japan. So once they get past 40 years, you're just constantly pouring money into them. The kitchen's been done at least. That's good news. Septic tank, okay, and water supply, that's not too bad. Building area 105 square, that's not too bad. And they've done the walls and the ceiling, only the interior. Okay, cloth means wallpaper. So, okay, no mention of exterior renovation. Just with the age of this house, please assume you'll be. It's not going to be in good structural condition. When we do the structural inspection,
if it's stuff that, you know, we can quantify and we can roughly understand how much it costs to fix, it's no big deal. But tilting, sinking, termite tracks, roof issues, those again can all cost several times the price of the property again. So we'll want to avoid those. This one seems to be on resort land, I think, because it comes with, what's that, about 20,000 yen a month? That's pretty expensive for a house. Okay. Doesn't mention here, but I'm assuming this would be on resort land. Otherwise, I'm not sure why you're paying this much every year in fees. Where was that? Oh, I lost it now. Yeah, that. So, not exactly sure what this is. It a land lease? No, it said ownership, right? Yeah. It's probably on resort land, which might mean that you're not going to be able to rent it out at all. So if the owner union doesn't allow short-term rentals specifically in the rule book, you're not going to be able to rent it out. Airbnb will never let you list without permission and a license. So that one we'll need to inquire with the seller, but I gotta say I don't like the age of it. It's definitely going to have some major structural issues.
From your experience, I mean, what do investors do if they were to see a condition like that? That is, of course, not the best. I mean, what would be the next steps? And
I mean, if you're a builder and renovator, or you have the connections to get the work done cheaply in Japan, it's maybe a project that some people want to take on, like Joey and Take from Akiyamart love doing that kind of thing, right? From my perspective, anything with major structural issues is going to be firstly a bit of a headache, but more importantly, potentially very expensive. So if you're buying a property for 5.4 million yen, and then you're going to be pouring another 6, 7, 8 million yen into it in renovations and repairs, then, you know, demolishing and rebuilding it is going to be about, I don't know, 17, 18 million yen. So it kind of starts to not make sense to pour too much money into it. But again, you're the boss, and some people love this kind of, you know, DIY labor of love project. They take maybe 6, 7, 8, 10 years to renovate it slowly over time until it, you know, becomes the exact dream home that they wanted. It's doable. It's just a matter of how hands-on do you want to be.
Definitely not us. We won't be the DIY type of profile.
In that case, it's going to be expensive because you're going to have to pay for everyone to do everything. Yeah. Plus, unless you have, I mean, you can work with an English-speaking renovation company, but they tend to be a bit more expensive. So you probably need somebody to manage the project and work with the traditional contractors like us. So that's an added layer of payment. It's still cheaper than hiring a, you know, a foreigner-facing renovation company, but it's not cheap. So again, you're the boss, but I would try to stay as close to 40 years and younger if you can.
Okay.
30 if you can afford it.
Got it. So you're suspecting that this may be on resort land and they may not allow for minpaku or any kind of like short-term.
Yeah, the resorts that are more like condos or, you know, condos with the villa units are definitely 90% of them don't allow any kind of rentals. They can't legally prohibit normal rentals, but they can legally prohibit short-term rentals. The ones that are very like more like gated communities with people, you know, buying and building their own homes and on all kinds of land plots within the resort, I'd say 50-50. Some of them allow it, some of them don't.
Okay.
This looks like the latter, so I'm not saying there's not a chance they allow it, but there's, I'd say, about 50% chance that they don't allow it. We'll have to check.
Got it.
The reason I'm saying it's on resort grounds is because of this fee here, right? Because they mention a 200 and how much was it? 268,000 yen a year. This, right? So unless that's a typo and that was actually carried over from another property listing, then that means that it's on resort ground.
Okay. Got it. I mean, the only way is, you know, for us is, you know, for Sherry and I to discuss if this is an area that we really like, if this is a home we really like, we would just engage the company research, I mean the research company, to just do that check for us whether it's applicable for short-term.
If it's rent. A matter of checking with the owner union and the resort management company, then we can do that without paying anyone. We can just ask the listing agent.
Oh, okay.
But whether the property itself qualifies and can get a license, which would depend on how far it is, for example, from public facilities like school or kindergartens, or what the local municipality says that you can do, because some of them will say, okay, you can only rent it out short term on the weekends and public holidays, right? So that's the kind of municipal licensing that we'll need the research company to research for us. If it's just a matter of asking whether the owner union allows it or not, then that we can check with the listing agent. It doesn't cost any money.
Okay, that's interesting.
The process of finding out whether it's going, whether it will be allowed to be run as a short-term rental, is the process straightforward, or would there be a lot of bouncing around, asking different departments, and then it would take like a long time, or it's a rather straightforward process? Like you just send it over to like a particular department, and then they'll let you know, like yes or no.
The initial research is going to be fairly straightforward. We'll be, again, paying 20,000 yen to the short-term stay research and management company. They'll contact that single government department in that local municipality and receive a list of rules and regulations of what's allowed and what's not allowed. And then they'll be able to tell us whether that property is likely to receive a license or not. They can't give you a guarantee because it's always up to the case officer discretion when you actually apply for the license. But they'll say it's, you know, highly likely or extremely unlikely that this property will qualify with the short-term stay license. It's highly likely or unlikely it'll comply with the requirements for a hotel license. And they'll give you a list of the reasons and a list of potential things that you might be able to do to make it comply. But for example, if it has to be within 500, you know, within more than 500 meters from a school, and it's not, there's no renovation we can do to fix that, right? So that's stage of the process is fairly simple. Once you purchase the property and start applying for the license, and again, we'll be using the short-term stay management company to apply for the license on your behalf, then they'll have more to-ing and fro-ing with the local fire and safety department, with the local police department, with that same municipality department again. But they will be doing all of that for you. It's not something that you need to go knocking on doors.
I see, but would the process be a quick one, or should we expect that this government body might take quite a long time to come back to?
I'd allow about 6 months from settlement and application for the license until the license is granted. If we're lucky, it'll be a lot less than that, but allow up to 6 months.
Oh, 6 months is really very long, because in Singapore, we pledge ourselves to be very efficient. So normally, if we don't hear back from a government body within like 5 working days, it's there will be a lot of complaints. But okay, I understand that this is how things are being done there.
I would get used to things taking a lot longer in Japan. Every stage of the process, the purchase, the licensing, dealing with real estate agent, everything will be a lot slower than you're used to. And being impatient will just cause you frustrations. Yeah.
It's very interesting, because we always thought that, you know, the Japanese are very efficient, that they do things very quickly. But okay, this is interesting.
They are very efficient in the sense that they have a procedure that's, you know, paper trail to the moon and back about how everything needs to be done. And once they make a decision, then they will be very quick and efficient in implementing it. But getting to the point where they'll say, okay, we can do this, will take a long, long time, especially if you're dealing with agents and municipalities in rural areas. They take even longer. Wow. So no, the Japanese are efficient, but they are not quick. Absolutely not.
Thank you. Thank you.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
So my question would be, so once the authorities are able to give you an idea whether this can be, this property or area can be used for short-term rentals, the next step, of course, would be to check for, you know, the inspection and then of course fire safety and then doing application for
well, the new before that. So the way we do it is we'd first, again, the cheapest check that we can make if we're moving up in the ladder, the cheapest thing that we can check first is whether it'll comply with a license or likely to comply with a license. Once that's done, we'll need to schedule a viewing, whether you'll be here with someone or we'll send somebody over, because that's going to cost more than 20,000 yen, depending on where the property is. And then listing agents will not accept offers without somebody having seen the property. So the viewing has to take place. And then once the viewing is done, if you're happy with what you've seen, then we will submit the offer. The offer will state on it that it's pending a structural inspection report. If the offer is accepted, we'll then go ahead and commission the structural inspection. That's going to cost you about 1,000 US if it's a typical size family home. Once we get the inspection report, then if we don't see any major red flags and you're okay moving forward, then we'll go to signing the contract, paying the 10% deposit, and then we will wait for the property lawyer to prepare the ownership transfer documents. You'll need to execute those overseas and send them back here. The entire process, once we've submitted an offer and the offer has been accepted, the entire process can take up to about 3 months until we settle. And that's when we can start applying for the license for a short-term stay.
So the six months
I've mentioned are on the back end of that.
Got it. So I think what we are trying to do is to eliminate all the uncertainties at the start, because we don't want to get inspection done. Oh, everything's good. All our hopes are up. But then later on, you know, we are not allowed to rent this out for short term. And then, you know, there'll be a bummer, right? So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's why I laid it out in this order. There are a bunch of checks that we'll need to do. The first and cheapest one is the short-term stay research, because that's a major criteria from you. Then if we are, you're not going to have a guarantee, though. You're going to have a highly likely or highly unlikely. That's the most you'll get, because
nobody
can say yes or no until the license application is actually processed.
I see.
Right. So that's the cheapest check that we can do. The viewing will cost a few extra $100. So that's the second check that we'll do. And then the structural inspection, which costs about $1,000, that's the third check that we'll do.
Okay.
If you're looking for guarantees, though, you're not going to find them, no.
Okay. But from your likelihood and probability, you know, just from a layman, you know, would that check or first layout check kind of give us that higher probability? Is that safe to say?
Yeah. I mean, the short-term stay research company also wants to be the management company. We don't have to use them, but we can use them if we want. They'll obviously want to be the management company because that's where they make most of their money. So if they say that it's likely to manage, they'll also say they're happy to manage it for you. Then that's, you can rely on that. I'm just very hesitating to say guarantee, because if we happen to land on a extremely annoying case officer who doesn't like foreigners at that local municipality, then they'll pile all kinds of hurdles in our way. So
got it. Yeah. Fair enough. Thanks, Ziv, for that.
No worries.
Very interesting. Okay. I think so. This is one property in Karazawa. In effect, Karazawa will be a place where I foresee myself, you know, going there often. And not just that, but I think there's going to be a lot of tourism there and all that. So this will be one priority that I'll be looking at. The other property that I'm looking at in Karazawa is this one. I'm going to share it with you on the chat.
Okay.
Take a look.
Well, that's the one we looked at. That's the second one. And now we're on to this one. Built 1990. That's better than 1964. I like that. It's tiny, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like one LDK.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, tiny means it's cheaper to renovate and repair. You've got a lower floor plan, so a smaller floor plan. So whenever something, on average, you'll be paying a lot less over time for renovations and repairs if you got a smaller property. I'm just wondering. Okay. Sewage, water. Okay, water supply and sewerage with septic tank, which is good. I'm not seeing any monthly fees, so this one is hopefully not on resort grounds. It is. It is, sorry. This is also on resort grounds. So again, something we'll need to check, because you're paying, but it's a very low fee. I'm assuming that's not a very heavily managed resort. So I like our chances of short-term stays better with this one. But again, I'm just guessing. We'll have to contact the listing agents and find out. But from everything you've shown me so far, this is my favorite, just because it's a lot younger and smaller on the maintenance.
Okay. Yeah, I like this. It's this nice trees, autumn foliage, like surrounding the property. I kind of like that feel.
Are you okay with that size space though? Do you have any kids coming with you?
We just have one kid. Yeah.
Okay, and you're all okay sleeping in that 8 tatami bedroom?
Yes, fine. No worries. Yeah. No worries.
Yeah. Yeah, I forget Singapore is not like our customers from the States, right? They need a lot more space than you guys do.
Yeah.
Oh, the living dining is pretty cool. I wouldn't mind bunking there. Okay, understood. Yep.
Nice. Do we have time for one more?
I'm good until 4 o'clock, but I think I have another meeting at 4 o'clock from memory. Let me quickly check. Yes, I do. So I'm good for another 7 minutes-ish.
7 minutes. Okay, let's do one more. This is near Mount Fuji. This one has quite a nice view.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Let's 1991. We're getting younger. Good job. Okay. Still typically sized. So the bottom, I'm assuming, is a concrete garage, right? From the looks of it. Nice. Okay, see, that little urinal there is a bit concerning to me. I think this might be on pump sewage, but let's see what the listing says. Wood sky, non-sloping land ownership. Also on resort grounds, by the way. No mention of sewage and water supply that I can see. Private. Oh, no, you can't rent this one out. Clearly says here.
Oh, private lodging means not allowed. Means
private lodging. I'll check the original Japanese, but I'm assuming they're referring to exactly to what you want to do, to short term stays. Oh. But let me confirm that. Sorry, my kanji skills are non-existent, so I will have to translate that.
No worries.
Yeah, minpaku. No, short-term stay not allowed.
Okay.
So I guess that rules it out for you?
Yeah, rules it out. Yeah. Bummer, I really like this brand. Okay, since we have maybe about 8 minutes left, so let's say we would like to engage Nippon Trading International.
Yep.
What would be the next step? Do we have, so we probably sign an agreement, but what would be the fees?
Well, if you want to wait until we can do everything on your behalf, then yes, we'll need engagement documents and so forth, but that's not going to be until looking like early or middle of next year. Consulting, we can start at any time, and that doesn't require any documents, just a 10-hour retainer invoice, which I'll send you away. You can pay for it, and then we can get started. And by the way, you don't feel obliged to hire us, so I'm more than happy to just introduce you to Japanese agents that you can work with directly. But if you need us consulting on the purchase, then it's just the 10-hour retainer that needs to be paid.
I think probably Sherry and myself would value someone like you, holding our hand at some points to just get some important tips. There are a lot of nuances in Japan that we may not pick out, so I think important that we know that. But yes, I think we do want to move forward. We do want to go over the line by first of all looking at some properties in January, and hence we have that trip made over there. Do you suggest that we talk to a realtor first and then just give them the listings that we have? Or maybe we need to send you the listings first so that you can do that initial screening.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. So I'll create a chat group. I've got you on WhatsApp. So we'll start the conversation between ourselves. We'll go through the listings. We'll, prioritize them, fine-tune the shortlist, and then kick off the conversation with the agent. But as we go through the listings, maybe all of them will fall out, and then the agent will research more listings for us, and then we'll take it up with them. But yeah, as long as we're going on the initial list, then yeah, let's yourselves and myself do it privately. And once we've got a fairly concrete list, then we'll take it up with the agent. Even before we contact the agent, we can already start researching them for short-term stay feasibility, and then only contact the realtor once we have properties that would actually comply.
Okay.
So that we can start at any time. Just send me a WhatsApp message with listings if you already have them, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. That will be right? Very fantastic. Babe, do you have any questions left?
No, all good. Oh, good. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon. So there you have it. Two good, thorough conversations, I thought, on the topic of purchasing and renting out properties in various profiles, various rental scenarios, various locations around the country. Hope this brought some value to you all. Let us know in the comments section of whichever platform you're tuning in from. And again, if you'd like to hear more, ask more questions, and network with more people who might be doing or interested in doing what you are, the Japan Real Estate Summit is where you want to be next month, whether in person or via the stream. Hop over to summit.realestate.jp and grab those tickets today. They usually don't last much longer than the last week or so before the event, and we are almost there. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.